Hi everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Roy. And by the grace, And by the grace of God, I haven't had a drink today, for which I'm grateful. Other than coffee and water and other such assorted appropriate substitutes for alcohol. And really want to begin with step nine, because 3 or 4 years ago I was asked to speak here, and I did the first 3 weeks, and I was really sick and was unable to come back for the fourth week. So I'm finally finishing that amend, and I'm finishing today what started some years ago. Again, just briefly, you know, came into AA when I was 22, that was in 1984, and didn't get sober till I was 28, which was in 1990. And step one for me was I couldn't quit, and I couldn't control, and I tried too hard to do that. And I proved to myself and anyone else who was interested that I was powerless. The unmanageability of my life, I was broke, I was single, I was sick, I was temporarily free, I was living with my grandmother. The insanity referred to in step two was my thinking that I could still control the situation. And my trying to do that again. My thinking that, you know, there's got to be some way that I'm going to beat the game. And for me, the power greater than myself was originally the group of drunks that worked with me. And then eventually I did come to believe that there was a power. And I'm at peace with that power today. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and lives. And, you know, as I was sharing 4 weeks ago, you know, my wife and I went to India in the year 2001. And we made a decision to go every year. And that was a great decision. We still haven't been back. But I'm happy to say that I finally booked the tickets and I just got the confirmation today. So now if the Indian government will give me a visa to get back, they think I'm trying to sneak back as an illegal alien, and hopefully we'll be able to complete that decision. So decisions are always tied into action. And for me, the action was 4 through 12. And 4 was just taking an honest inventory. Who I was pissed off at, what I had done to them, what I was afraid of, or who I was afraid of, my sexual conduct, and the people I had harmed who may not have been on one of those other three lists. And then the honesty in sharing that with a sponsor in step five, or sharing that with God, as I did not understand God at the time that I wrote that fourth step. I didn't have a God in my life. I had an if in my life, if there is a God. So my sponsor said, that's fine. You wrote this, you think there is something there, that something is properly read it. Don't worry about it. That was good enough for me at that time. 6 and 7, you know, I really didn't think I needed them until my sponsor pointed out that my entire character was defective. And I've continued to do 7 since. Step 8, I still have one amend left from my original list of 1990, and that was $50 I stole from a company I worked at in 1978. I was broke and I wanted to buy some chocolates for Easter, and I stole that $50, and you know, I helped everyone look for it after. And I can tell by the laughter that there's more of you who've done the same thing in this room. Yes. No, that's what I loved about AA. It was God grant me the laughter. You know, I never met a bunch of people who spent so much time laughing at the stuff they did in their lives. That made me feel at home. But that amend I still haven't done. The owners, the guy, the accountant of the company died. The company closed down. Both the owners closed down. It's not an amend that I could not have made. I could have made it. You know, my pride and my fear has kept me from making that amend. Then they both died and they said, okay, that's good. I'm off the hook now. But I recently received an email from my school, And so now I have the email address of the guy's son. And guess what? He lives in America. So I got to calculate 1978, all that interest. What am I going to tell him? And there's more pride and fear involved because the owner's son was a friend of mine. So that's one amend which on some days I'd been willing to make and on other days I'd been unwilling to make. And I just sat on that for the last 22 years. More from a sense of false pride being injured. Oh, what will they think of me? Than anything else. And it's probably going to be even more difficult to make amends to the son than it would have been to make the original amends to the owner of the company. But that's the bed that I made. And, you know, I complicated the situation by not... what is that word? Promptly. Where's that prompt word gone? Promptly? Ah, 10. We're going to come up to that. So that's been my 9-step experience back then. I continue to make new mistakes as I live from day to day, so I get new opportunities to write those. And for the most part, I'm pretty okay with making those amends in a fairly reasonable time. So that brings us to step 10, 11, and 12. And so again, in 1990, when I said we got to my 9-step list and my sponsor came with me on my first couple of amends to make sure I actually paid the money back, because I was notorious. I had a history of taking money from people to pay something off and then not paying it off. And then he taught me about 10, 11, and 12 right on that day. And he said, our program says that we start doing 10 as we clean up the past. So how exactly was I as a willing person to do 10? And, you know, one of my character defects is laziness. And if I can avoid writing or doing anything that needs to be done, I'll do that. Somebody just told me there's this great app called Dragon Dictation. What a blessing, man. I just speak into the thing and it just sends the emails off to people. No more writing. Wonderful. And it's free. Even better. So why am I bringing that up? Because when I first got sober, I was under the impression some really wise people who had graduated some of the finest treatment centers in the world had come out with this sheet of paper on which were instructions on how to do a 10-step. So here's where confusion set in, because it says continued, and in the book it says constantly. And so I, being lazy, I didn't want to bloody be walking around Bombay, you know, keeping on pulling out stuff, bits of, oh my God, there, I'm selfish, resentful again, fearful again. And my sponsor said, no, you're done with the writing. And that's the beauty of this 12-step fellowship. You only write once in step 4. And that's what I love about it. That's the only writing I did in this program. So for me, it meant I had to continue to watch for selfishness and dishonesty and self-seeking and fear. Oh, I'd already had some practice in that. I learned how to do that in step 4. So this wasn't anything strange or new or different. And since I just finished doing my step 4, and we were sitting there with all this paperwork, it was very fresh. Oh, this is cool. I can do this. And when these crop up, you know, we ask God at once to remove them. Oh, that's something that I already learned to do. In step 4, I prayed for God to remove the resentments. I prayed for God to remove the fear. You know, I prayed for God to give me an ideal sex life. And I prayed for God to give me the strength for the people I had harmed. So in that respect, this was something I already knew how to do. And it wasn't strange or different. You know, have I kept something to myself which needs to be discussed with someone else? I just finished a 5th step with a sponsor. And then I turned my make amends promptly. I'm not very good at the prompt bit, although I do get around to amends eventually. So if I owe any of you amends, just speak to me in about 22 years and we'll straighten it out. But, so when I looked at step 10, look like a summary of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And that's something that I had already been doing more or less in my first 4 or 5 months of sobriety. So this wasn't difficult at all. It did mean that I would have to be aware when these things were going on. I don't know about you guys, but I'm always aware when I'm in the wrong. I always know when I'm pissed off. I'm always aware when I take that last piece of chocolate and another 8 people, you know, trying to... I'm aware. I know when I'm selfish. I know when I'm dishonest. You know, I don't need some higher power to go, ooh, are you being dishonest? I know. And some of us call it common sense and some of us call it conscience. And whatever you're comfortable with, you know, this was my experience. And that's it. Watchfulness for this stuff, you know, acknowledgement that something's wrong. Thank God today for cell phones and, thank you Phil, and text messages and stuff, because now when I'm selfish or dishonest or whatever, I can immediately text somebody, you know, and say, oh, I screwed up again, you know, and get a text message. Fred gets messages from me, you know, at 6:30 in the morning, and then later I have to make amends for waking him up, and you know. So, but it's a way of living that's really incredibly wonderful. So now we came to step 11, and that was step 10. I just continue to do it. If I screw up, try and you know make it right as soon as I can. Some of the most difficult amends I have to make are usually at work. You know. I work at a place where I'm in a position of authority. You know, I'm the director of a drug and alcohol outpatient program, and sometimes I have to make some difficult decisions, and very often and convey those decisions to people. And very often, I don't find myself doing that in a helpful manner. You know, I find arrogance creeping in, and I find myself talking down to people, and you know, the whole better than syndrome comes back, and then I'm feeling really lousy about that. And then the difficult part is making amends. I can't tell you the number of times I've had to walk into a group and make an amend to some patient who's been over there. Oh, why do I need to do that publicly? Well, because I humiliated the guy publicly 3 days before. So that has been very difficult for me. What's even more difficult is to make apologies to the staff that I supervise. But the most difficult amends that I find that I have to make are with my son. He's 10 now, you know, and on the days that I don't want to strangle him, I want to kill him. But, you know, I learned such lessons in forgiveness from him, because I lose my patience and my tolerance, and I'll scream at him and I'll do all kinds of stuff. And then I'm going to make the amends, and I'm apologizing and say, I'm really sorry that I did this. And it's incredible. Every time I made the amends, he does the same thing. It's okay, Dad, and he'll give me a kiss on my cheek. And that's it. It's forgotten. It's over. Why can't I be like that? I'm not like that. Oh, man, you cross me on the Belt Parkway, I got your number written down on a list that I have there. You know, if I see you 3 days from now, you bet I'm going to cut you off. You just watch. I'm not forgiving. And that's why I need this 10th step constantly. Because if I'm going to continue to remain in those kind of behaviors of resentment and fear and holding grudges and stuff like that, all those defects are going to come back in step 7. The defects are going to drive my behaviors. Then you're going to react to my behaviors. Then I'm going to resent your reactions. Then I'm going to get restless, irritable, and discontented. And you'll all be coming and paying a 12-step call on me. Because I'll be drinking again. So this is really an insurance policy for me, so that I can take care of things quickly enough. Brought me to step 11. And just because I'm from India, and you know, there's all this yoga and all this good stuff. The only yoga I do is sleeping yoga. Fall asleep, that's it. Don't ask me about yoga. Don't ask me about spirituality in India. I have no idea about any of that stuff. But if you really want to know, you can ask Anil. He's an expert. He's over there at the back. And he'd be happy to answer all your questions. And sorry to put you on the spot, bro. It's great to have another one like me in here. So, So I asked my sponsor, and remember, at this point, I'm 5 months sober. I've just finished my fourth and 135 days sober. 120, about 4.5 months sober. And I'm still, if there is a God. So I said, how do I do this 11th step? I really didn't know. And he said, it's very simple. Step 11 is talking to God. That's the prayer pit. And then the rest of step 11 is listening to God. So I said, what do I do? He said, you've already started practicing. In the morning you say, if there's a God, please keep me sober. You say, if there's a God, take my will. If there's a God, take away my defects. Well, continue to pretend that if there is a God, something, and add to your list of requests. If there's a God, please let me find some employment so I don't have to sponge off my poor grandmother anymore. Things like that. And what about the listening bit? He said, when you shut up, you will hear stuff. So what do you mean? He said, open mind works best with a closed mouth. So keep your mouth shut and the answers will come to you. So I did try that. And as I said, you know, I didn't always like the answers I got. You know, I'd be waiting at a bus stop and, you know, two buses would go by without stopping. And I'd be really upset about that. And then some old timer would say, well, maybe God is trying to teach you patience. Maybe there's another way to teach me, but he gets to give the lessons and I get to be the student. So that's how I originally started out with my 11th step. When I did come to believe, and I did start to explore this program again, the second, you know, after I was sober and someone gave me a big book and I started to do the program, I found that the 11th step is such a practical way to live my life. Because it's got two or three very clearly marked components. It starts with when we retire at night. Oh, when do I do that at night? Well, I work the overnight shift. Okay, when do you sleep in the morning? Is that your night? Yes. Okay, then start over there. So when we retire at night, we carefully review our day. That's the question. What do I do today? Where was I selfish or dishonest or self-seeking or afraid? Oh, wow, I already caught most of that because I did some 10 steps during the day. So there's really not that much left over at the end of night. You know, do I owe someone an apology? Have I kept some... the next question is really important. Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? It does not say discuss it at once. If I am sponsoring you, do not call me at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, I'm doing 11th step, I need to discuss this at once. No, it should be. Just don't discuss it at once. And, you know, what could I have done better? Or did I drift into worry or remorse or morbid thinking? Why? Because that's going to make me depressed and go to my therapist? No! Because that's going to diminish my usefulness to other people. And that's my main purpose now, to try and help other people. Not just alcoholics, but people in general. And that's really what I have to do at night. And it doesn't say so in the book, but it would be nice if Bill W. had added, and then go to sleep. No, because after I've done that, then I'm sitting and waiting for God to tell me what to, doesn't matter. So I've learned over time to do that review and then just try and go to sleep. And then the next section, you know, in the 11th step for me says on awakening. When you wake up. I wake up at 2 in the afternoon. Great. So on awakening, I consider my plans for the day. I love that part of the 11th step. But before I do that, I'm going to ask God to divorce my thinking of selfish and self-seeking motives, because then if it's all about me, how am I going to help Natalie? I won't. So divorce my thinking, and then we consider our plans for the day. I still do this. Take out a piece of pencil and paper. Well, now I've updated to electronic lists. Call Phil, stop at Dunkin' Donuts for coffee, yell at 3 employees, cut whatever the list is, you know. Like today's list, I had to get online, I had to fill up the visa application form, I had to call the embassy and fight with them because they wanted a copy of my naturalization certificate. And it says there, it is unlawful and illegal to copy this. So I'm calling them and saying, listen, I'm a US citizen, you asked me to commit a felony? Does the State Department know this? I'll bring this to you. You make the copy if you want. Sir, do you want to go to India? Do you want your application to go to the bottom of the pile? I'll be there tomorrow morning. So we make a list. We make our plans for the day. We ask God to divorce our thinking and then off we go. We do it. That's it. What happens if I'm not sure what to do? One of my favorite lines in the big book. Page 86. Said, in facing our day, we may face indecision. We may not know what course of action to take. And it says, and sometimes I have people call me, oh, Roy, I don't know what to do. Should I do this? Should I do that? I say, can you open your book to page 86? Yes. Read at the bottom of the page. It does not say we ask Roy. It says we ask God. Why are you calling me? If you don't know what to do, ask God. That's what I do. God, and it's literally as conversational. I'm stuck on the belt. God, what do I do? 10-10 wins. If you take exit 14, Pennsylvania Avenue. Okay, great. The right answers will come after you've tried this for a while. You know, for a while. For some people, a while is a long time. For other people, and depending on how honest your motives are, and I try to be really honest, and I started to get some really good answers. I've heard people in AA say, you know what, God talks to me. I hope God talks to you. Because that's what the program promises. They said, if thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact, if he's going to be telling me what to do, the right answers will come. I hope God's talking to me. Sometimes in dreams, sometimes through other people. And it says we conclude this period of meditation, this writing the list, with a simple prayer that will be shown all through the day. How we can best help someone, or what the next thing is to do. And it's that simple for me. And that brings us to step 12. And I just love the 12th step. My first 12th step call was my first day back sober. And at the end of that meeting, after I had done my step 1, 2, 3 with my sponsor, Franco, Marshall, and Xavier, the three guys in that group, they took me on a 12th step call. They went and rang the doorbell of the late Tony D. This guy had been sober in AA for 12 years. Then he had a drink at his daughter's wedding, and he was in his 12th year of relapse when they rang the door. Tony opens the door, glass in hand. Hey, Tony, how are you? Here's Roy. He's got about 16 or 18 hours sober. We've brought him along to show him what happens to jackasses who don't follow him. Tony D. emptied his glass down the sink, put on his clothes. We took him to hospital. He never had another drink. And then he died sober a few years later. That was my first 12-step call. A lot of stuff in the big book, some people here may have experienced, but have really lived that in India. You know, we had on an average about 10 meetings a day in the city, 10 meetings an evening, not day meetings, in the city that I got sober in. So if you miss the meeting, that's it. There's no, oh, I missed the 7, I'll hit the 9, I'll go for midnight madness, that was it. The meeting is over. There were 4 rehabs in the country. Hospitals kept beds for people with real diseases. They didn't admit drunks and alcoholics. You could only get in if you were a victim of an accident. So we'd be there at the intergroup and we'd getting phone calls and everything the big book says. The first instruction in the book. If there's a prospect, find out all you can. And I'm sitting there in the group. Oh, really? How old is he? What religion is he? Is he broke? Is he working? What kind? How much education? Where do you live? What? And we would get all this information and then figure out who were the 2 best guys to go and do that 12-step call. What time does he go in the morning for his first drink? 6 o'clock? Oh, where does he drink? Illegal. Hooch. Moonshine. Okay. I mean, I've done all kinds of shady spiritual stuff on 12-step calls. You know, I've gone dressed in 3-piece suits, ding dong, 6 o'clock in the morning. Hi, we've been sent by the Liquor Commission. The owner of the bar sent us. You're drinking too much. He's worried. And we've done that. I've had those 12-step calls. They've been wonderful. I'm going to share 2 or 3 different 12-step experiences, and then after that, I'm just going to sum up with how I try to practice the program today. One 12-step experience I had was when I was about a year sober, and I was at a meeting, and there was this young guy. He must have been 25, 26, crying, and I took him home. So he stayed home with me for about 3 or 4 days while I was detoxing him. I put together a concoction of whiskey, honey, and I don't even know what I put in there. But whatever it was, he didn't like it because he kept puking, and that was great. That meant he was detoxing. But while this poor kid is detoxing, I was playing the movie My Name is Bill W. And he still laughs. And this poor guy is in withdrawals, and I'm pausing. Okay, you see that? Now that guy's Bill W. Play a few more free. Now see that fellow? That's Dr. Bob. That guy got sober, and he got sober. His family took him back. His wife took him back. He had another baby in sobriety. And when I was leaving the country, he and his wife gave me the solid silver ring, which has the AA symbol on it, and with one day at a time written on it. That was 15 years ago. He is 21 years sober. He's still sober. And now, the reason I bring up this case is because he lived in a state in India, which was a dry state. No alcohol, but lots of alcoholism. There was no AA in that state. This kid would, Gujarat, and this guy would take a train and come to Bombay every Friday night, 250 miles. Come to Bombay, we'd go to a Friday night meeting, we'd go to a Saturday morning meeting, we'd spend the whole day in sponsorship, we'd do a Saturday night meeting, and the next day, Sunday, take a train back to his little town. He did that for 1 year. When he had his first year anniversary, my entire home group, all 12 of us, or 13 we all got on the train and we went to his hometown. We organized a public relations meeting. We spoke to the police, to the doctors, to the local school. We organized the first AA meeting over there. About 4 or 5 people actually stayed after the public meeting. And the first AA meeting started. Today there are 10 groups in that state, from that one group. So the reason I bring that up is this guy would make this trip every week, and today I have the luxury of deciding which meeting to not go to, depending on who's currently pissing me off. Or whether I like the coffee or not, or the cookies weren't too cool and stuff like that. So that's one experience. The second experience was in 1995, God gave me an opportunity to work in a Middle East country. Alcohol is outlawed over there. They'll chop off your hands or your tongue or something if they catch you drinking. So there was no AA over there. So I had to go twice a week to Dubai, which was a 45-minute ride away, and twice a week to Abu Dhabi, which was 2 hours away. So 4 times a week I'd go to these 2 different countries for AA meetings. And then when I was there for a couple of months, another guy came there who also had 5 years, and the two of us opened a big book. We followed directions and we started a meeting there. And the Tuesday Night Just for Today group in Sharjah, UAE, and it's still running all these years later. And every Tuesday, Mark and I would show up. You again, I'd tell Mark my story, he'd tell me his story. And then we would drive the US Embassy mad because we'd be calling the US Embassy in, hey, are there any American ships in town? Oh, sir, that's classified information. No, you don't understand. There are sailors on that ship that need a meeting. Sir, that's still classified information. So then we'd go and talk to the taxi drivers and to the ladies of the night. And they would let us know when the ships were in town. And Mark and I would go down to the port with a big sign, any friends of Bill W. on board. And we'd take some poor unsuspecting sailors off for a meeting. Now, they thought they were going for a meeting, not realizing that two of us were the meeting. And we'd sit them down, and we'd sit there and say, boy, we're waiting for new stories. Having had a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience. A spiritual experience was in 2002, we had just moved to Long Island. And as I was asked to speak at the Hicksville Group anniversary, and I was telling my story, and I had shared this this bit, and after the meeting, this guy came up to me with tears rolling down his eyes, and he said that he was one of the sailors that picked up. I mean, what are the odds? I mean, someone in 2005, in 95, 7 years later, out in Hicksville, Long Island, you meet somebody. My hair standing. That's a spiritual experience. And so that was one experience. When I first started sponsoring people, I just took them through the steps, you know, and they'd be done in a month. Then somewhere along the way, my pride and ego got in the way, and I decided that if they really had to get sober, I had to sit down and read the big book to them, word by word, giving them explanations and commentaries. And if I was lucky, I'd get through about two people a year. Most people were drinking within 2 or 3 weeks because it would take... they wouldn't get up to the fourth step for about 5 or 6 weeks, and or they would disappear. Thank God I had another spiritual experience, and you know, now I just try and stay with what the book says. You know, it says on page 91, tell him your story. Within 1 hour, just spend an hour. Find out if he wants to quit for good. If not, say see ya. And if he does want to quit, give him a copy of the big book. Buy one. It's only $8. It's less than a packet of cigarettes. You know, tell him to read the book and call you back. When he calls you back, ask him, do you want to do all the 12 steps? If he says yes, start. I usually do step 1, 2, and 3 with people who ask me to work with them the first time I meet them, and have them start with 4. And then we do step 4 the second time. Most people I work with are done in a month or so. And it's not my job to get them or keep them sober. My job is just to show them precisely what I did. It took me 130 days to do all 12 steps. You don't have to wait that long. Bill W. did his steps in 3 days, Dr. Bob in 3 weeks. If that was good enough for the founders, should be good enough for me. So, having had a spiritual awakening, I try to carry this message. What is the message? Self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of my shortcomings, and the ability to tell other people that there is a way to get sober and stay sober. I do the same thing today that I've been doing for the last 21 years. I wake up in the morning, and between the bedroom and the bathroom, I say, God, please keep me sober today. And that is step 1 and 2. By saying, please keep me sober, I'm acknowledging that I'm as powerless today, 21 years and 10 months later, as I was back then. By saying, God, please keep me sober, I'm acknowledging step 2. That's a power greater than myself that can do the what was impossible for me. While I'm in the shower, I do my version of step 3, take my will and life, take away my difficulties, the traffic on the belt, whatever that is. I also do a 7th step in the shower. God, you know what my defects are? Do what you want with them. End of story, finish my shower, get into the car, and between Baldwin and the belt, while I'm negotiating sunrise, I'm doing a 10th step. Consider my plans for the day. So I'm driving, texting, writing, resenting other people who are doing the same. But really, that's what I do. It's a combination of 11 and 10. What are my plans for the day? And that's it. During the day, I get an opportunity to practice step 10, promptly text somebody if I can. And when I come home at night, I do that 11-step review before I sleep. That's it. It's pretty simple. It seems to have worked. I haven't found it necessary to drink since the 22nd of April, 1990. I want to thank the Lynbrook Primary Purpose Group for asking me to come in and speak. And I hope to see some of you at my home group. It's the Baldwin Group of Long Island. Thanks.